part of the book Religious Affections from Jonathan Edwards. The point is, with some of these books, Edwards is a great resource with things he wrote, so we're looking at some of the things he wrote. We're not looking at everything he wrote, and we're in looking at Religious Affections, clearly we're not looking in every page and so forth. Again, the background, Edwards experienced revivals, great revivals in his times in the mid-1730s, and then was reflecting on that later, and part of that reflection resulted in this book, Religious Affections. That is a useful sort of reflection to us, too, because we have some of the similar sorts of concerns. I think we could, at least, I know that in talking to all of you at various times, some of you, we experience things, either we've been in a different setting, or we have friends or relatives, and they're saying this and such, and, you know, we're kind of reacting to it and thinking, no, I haven't ever seen that, or no, I haven't experienced that, or that doesn't seem quite right to me, or I'm not sure about that. How do I process that through, discern it? I was just yesterday looking at something and doing something to somebody else who was just had written a letter, a newsletter, that I have experienced coming the other direction, and that is denominational affiliation. So somebody can be suspicious of me because of my denominational affiliation. I've experienced that. Well, I was being suspicious of this person because of their denominational affiliation. I was thinking, whoa, wait a minute, I don't know about reading this. And so we have that sort of framework that we operate in. And as I was thinking about this yesterday, I thought, but I go back and I've known plenty of people in that denomination, and what is the true sign of religious affections, if you will, there? Well, it's the same as here, and that is what Edwards is getting at. He lays up this. Table of contents shows his kind of thinking. You know, he says, okay, these things are not certain signs, and we've been through a couple of those, and today we're going to look at one chapter in under the heading, the larger heading, showing what are distinguishing signs of truly gracious and holy affections. It's another way of saying, well, here I go back to Elaine and I were a number of years ago in Vermont or New Hampshire or someplace. New Hampshire, I think, because we went to both of them. And on a Sunday, we wanted to go fellowship with the saints, and we went to a church where, I mean, the message was as weird a thing as you could ever find in a Christian church. I would not categorize the pastor, certainly based on his message, as being a Christian. It wasn't a Christian message. What was it? Gandhi had some good thoughts for us or something like that.
Comparing Jesus with Gandhi,
okay.
And how they were the same.
Right.
And it was a pretty bizarre.
Okay, so we're there, and then afterwards, everybody's invited to hang around. But there are plenty of Christians there. I mean, how can I say that? Why do I say that? I mean, clearly there were. Well, these sorts of thoughts that we're going to explore today are the sorts of thoughts that I have when I'm thinking that. Well, there are Christians here. These people are showing distinguishing signs of being Christians. That pastor, through that message, was not. I mean, that was clear. So, the lower header that we're going to look at today is titled, get this, truly gracious affections, differ from those affections that are false and delusive in that they tend to and are attended with lamb-like, dove-like, spirit and temper of Jesus Christ. So, in looking at some of these false ones, we were seeing, and Edwards does a great job of this, I had not fully realized until this whole class session, course, if you want to call it that, how he went about it. I'd kind of read bits and pieces of this book. But, you know, he goes to the scriptures on some of these, what he's calling incomplete or uncertain things, and he's saying, these are signs that Christians demonstrate, you know, boldness and so forth. Well, we were talking about. But also, in specific, think back a couple weeks ago, the Pharisees were very devoted to their religious exercises. So he says, Christians, you are. Of course you are. And we can see that biblically, a lot of Bible verses. But the false professors of religion are equally devoted, or can be. So that is not a certain sign. So now, what is a certain sign? Here he's saying this, what he's calling lamb-like, dove-like, spirit and temper of Jesus Christ. If you see that, or, you know, that is a certain sign. Someone, a false professor of faith, is not going to be showing that in their lives. Yeah, Bill?
There are false prophets.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so it's a general statement, right? And then, of course, the caveat is, well, all of us are not lamb-like and dove-like all the time, right? So, you know, we're not perfect. So that's absolutely true. Well, now here, let's just look at a couple of verses. These are a little bit overwhelming in that there the number of them that you could look at. And also it's a bit hard because this really isn't all that controversial, so it doesn't get our ire up. It's pretty straightforward, but it's also kind of hard to see fully too. So let's look at Matthew 5. And we're just going to flip through a couple of these passages real quick and then say, well, how do we sum this up? So I've got Matthew 5, 5 to 9. Somebody wants to read that for us.
Blessed are the gentle, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God.
Okay. And then, you know, if Edwards was highlighting in his Bible, what he's highlighting here is, you know, blessed are the meek, gentle, merciful, peacemakers. He's particularly highlighting those verses and phrases. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 13. You know, these are all very familiar passages probably to many of you. They're just fundamental, basic passages. What does it mean to live the Christian life?
First Corinthians what?
13. And there I have verses 4 and 5. Somebody want to read that for us? Yeah.
I can.
Okay, John.
So just verses 4 and 5?
Yeah.
Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful.
Okay. Now, let's look at Galatians 5. Here we have fruit of the Spirit. Galatians 5, 22 to 23.
But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, and faith. Oh, that's 22.
meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law.
All right. So he particularly picked that one out. Meekness, gentleness in there. And then James 3. James chapter 3. So I think I did this, so we're just flipping farther and farther back. It's hard when we flip all over the place. I mean, there's a bunch of Bibles right up there. All right, James 3, 14 to 17, I have. Yeah, Bill, go ahead.
Okay, James 3, 14 to 17. If you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. And 16.
And 17.
Okay. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder and every vile practice. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceful, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy, and good fruits, impartial and sincere.
Okay. All right. And then, come on in. Then let's flip back to Matthew chapter 11. Here I have verse 29. Matthew 11, 29. So let's say 28 to 30. Matthew 11, 20. Go ahead, Daphne.
Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light.
Okay. And another way we have that, for I am gentle or I am meek. So, I mean, King James, right? It said that there. We have some other verses that maybe we'll look at too in being conformed to Christ in this. But the first question you could ask, and really Edward's point, his overall point in this, is a genuine Christian is going to be meek, gentle, humble. Now, we've all heard this idea of meekness. What is meek? I mean, and like I say, the thesis is this is, in essence, a certain sign of Christians, whereas we've had these uncertain signs. What is meekness? This is something that's strange to us to some degree, but familiar. Yeah, Bill.
To me, it's sort of like don't overestimate your self-worth, position, authority, but on the other hand, don't underestimate.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
You have to be peaceful and seeking that.
Yeah.
But you know, we're not pacifists.
Right. Yeah. Anybody else? Yeah, Jeff.
I've heard a definition: strength under control.
Okay. All right. Now you know we have the lamb-like idea of meekness. So do you think of a lamb as strength under control?
No.
Right. So I have a little question on that one. But, you know, we're kind of, what is this again? Yeah, Nick? Yeah.
I'd say it's kind of like a not being prideful in ourselves, not boasting in what we do, but, you know, boasting in Christ.
Okay. Great. I mean, in Edwards putting this forward as being something, what's his terminology here? Showing what are truly distinguishing, if you permit me to add that word, what are truly distinguishing signs of gracious and holy affections. In other words, what's the essence that someone should see in themselves, should be demonstrating? What does it come right down to? Add all these kind of things where it could go either way. Yeah, Bill.
I have kind of an analogy, like when you shoot a shotgun, if you hold it, I'm told, I've shot it.
Okay.
You know, like 2 inches from your shoulder, and try and hold it, you will fire that thing and it will kick.
Yeah, it'll hurt, yeah.
Black and blue mark.
Yeah.
So you seat it against your shoulder, and then fire, and that
okay.
preserves yourself from getting hurt. So if we see ourselves as without strength, lest we be seated against Christ, then that's where we're giving strength.
Okay.
If we try and get forward of things and see ourselves strengthened ahead of Christ or without Christ, then we get hurt.
Okay. When it's saying the meek shall inherit the earth, I mean, you know, this whole area I'm terrible on. I mean, these passages I really struggle with. To fully grapple, hold on to, and so forth. But in part, if you think about the meek shall inherit the earth, in other words, you can rest in Christ knowing that all that's going to be due to you or however it's going to be carried out, the Lord is going to take care of all these things. And there's a meekness in that, that we can rest. I think that's in part the idea of the lamb. Like, we don't have to, you know. Yeah, we're not a chihuahua. You know, maybe to contrast a lamb and a chihuahua. We don't need to be rushing here and there. We can wait. Or, you know, move as we're called. I'm looking for anybody have any thoughts on this. I mean, this is one of those ones. It's not great controversy, but it's essential and yet hard to kind of articulate too. Yeah, Nick.
So I just have a question. How is this problem that I suffer with? How being meek and humble do we go about? Because I have a fervor and a passion that I love arguments with people and talking to them, and I get really into it.
Sure.
And I don't think they come across as meek and humble.
Okay. And, you know, so we start out, we're thinking, we're talking to somebody, and, you know, we're genuinely interested, and then maybe we end up where, you know, you walk away and you say, maybe I shouldn't have said that, or I think I really went way too far, or something. You know, we're caught up, or I don't want to let go. No, you don't understand. This is the way it is. So we you know, how, what balance, or is that what your question would be? I mean, I'm trying to amplify your thought a little bit.
Yeah, I'm just trying to come across the best way that I can.
Yeah, 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 Bill.
Like Karl Marx or something, he had a real view on religions of the world because they got people to let loose of things that they shouldn't have.
Okay.
And, you know, maybe that could be a little bit right. In other words, if I were to get cancer, I would be very glad to have a relationship with God. If
that okay.
happened to me financially, I would be very glad. I'm not going to go looking for it.
All right.
In other words, I think as a meek person, we can be good at business.
All right. Yeah. Now.
We can be healthy people.
All right.
Not whether.
There's a couple of thoughts, and sticking to Nick's thought too. I'm just trying. Like I say, it's Edwards has really focused on this rightly. But it's hard to think it through all the way, to articulate and so forth. You know, one of the things in it's, well, who is ultimately you know, what's the point of, let's say, the argument? Is the argument to win? Is it to make sure that somebody knows that I'm smarter than they are? Of course, you know, I know you're not going to agree to any of those statements. Well, then if the point of an argument, let's say on serious spiritual matters, is to direct the person toward Christ, who ultimately is going to change their heart? We know the Lord is. And so we don't need to get caught up in pride in ourselves. Well, nailed that one. Thank you, Gary. Yeah, I mean, you can, but it doesn't mean you can't keep coming back. And Edwards, he will have a further point on there's a Christian battle as well. So it's, he's making both points at the same time. But other thoughts were over here, and then Jeff too.
Sometimes when I read these, partly why it's so hard to articulate them is because we can't make them happen. You know, if we sit there and go, well, I kind of know what he's saying, and I'm going to implement the 12-step plan for being like this, and all we pull off is false humility. You know, and so every time we try to kind of articulate, we all recognize what meekness looks like in someone else, and we recognize it as a spiritual attribute, and yet it's so hard to articulate because we can't just break it down into its parts and make it happen.
Yeah.
But, I mean, ultimately, meekness is the ability to just get yourself out of the way. And when you're having that conversation, you realize that it's not about you. It's not about, you know, trying to maintain a relationship with this person. It's not about coming out and trying to look smart or articulate or any of those other things. And that's so hard because temperaments get in the way.
All right. Jeff.
As a young Christian, I can remember reading Proverbs, and I looked at it as, who are these fools? I'm not that. But the older I am as a Christian, I realize I am the fool. And really owning the fact that even as a Christian, I deserve God's wrath, full wrath, even today, that humbles me. As I enter into any conversation, I'm pointing them and me to Christ at the same time, making sure they understand I deserve God's wrath just like you. So I'm a lot softer in my conversations with people because of that. So it's my daily recognize the fact of law and let it bury me. But then gospel, let it bring me up to remind me of who I am.
Okay.
So I can enter into the conversation.
Okay.
Meekly, I don't know if that's part of it.
All right. Yeah, one of the things that came to mind also when Daphne was making her comments was, I thought about this. Over the years, I've had people come up to me who were different thinking or something like that, and they would challenge me. And I've never had anybody come up to me and say, "Are you meek for the Lord?" That's the part of the point. I mean, we do find that this is completely a work of God, and I don't understand. I can't think, okay, Lord, please today make me more meek somehow. What does that mean? how do I carry that out? And so I think part of the point with Edwards and why he's touching on this is, so therefore a false professor of religion is not likely to show what we would understand to be true meekness, Christ-likeness, being like Christ. I mean, now, there are different temperaments. We're all, have different kind of natural characters, and that works its way out. Some of us are quieter. Some of us are noisier. Just that's how we are, personalities and things like that. The classic one, my dad wanted me to understand, before Elaine and I got married, people were different. And so that's been very helpful. Elaine really likes argument, and get in there and so forth. And I do, because we grew up debating things, but it's not so much a part of my personality. So, you know, to say one thing. Or I'm quieter in general. Well, that doesn't mean that I am necessarily meek in my quietness. This is illustrated, the mom that said, or the, you know, the little phrase, okay, the kid was being disciplined and the kid was thinking or saying or something like that. You know, I'm sitting down on the outside, but I'm standing up on the inside. And so we may be quiet, but still have pride, yes, or whatever it is. It may not be expressed in the same way. Let's just continue with some verses. Like I say, it's a tough thing to discuss, but I think it's worthy of our study and discussion. Let's look at Romans 8:29. So very familiar here. Some of us could probably say this right off the top of our heads. Anybody want to read that for us? Romans 8:20. How about you, Ruth? Go ahead.
For those God foreknew, He also predestined to be conformed to the likeness of His Son, that He might be the firstborn among many brothers.
Okay. So here we have this idea of being Christ-like. Now, there might be some, like I was saying, we heard this strange message one time. Guy was comparing Gandhi and Christ, and so he might have, I don't remember anything about it, but you know, someone might falsely argue that Gandhi's like Christ because he did such and such. But the ultimate thought here is that only the Christian is being conformed to the likeness of Christ. So this is a true sign of being a Christian, or religious affections that are genuine. So now, you know, what is being conformed to the image of Christ? I mean, that's kind of what we're getting at in one this one particular aspect. Yeah, Kerry, you must have a question there. Yeah.
You're saying Gandhi was like Christ?
Well, someone would argue, okay, he was non-violent or this and such.
Yeah, but he was kind of missing basic.
Yes. I'm saying someone could start falsely. You could go in and somebody could say this and such, and okay, he's like him in this, and they're like, you know.
Okay.
It wouldn't hold up to true examination.
Yeah.
or that Christ is like Gandhi, you know, might be the argument or some strange thing. So let's look at 1 Corinthians 15. And here I have verses 47 to 49. Somebody want to read that for us?
Okay.
All right, John?
So 47 to 49.
Yeah.
Chapter 15. The first man was from the earth, the man of dust. The second man is from heaven. As was the man of dust, so also are those who are of the dust. And as is the man of heaven, so also are those who are of heaven. Just as we have borne the image of the man of dust, we shall also bear the image of the man of heaven.
Okay. So again, this idea of being made like Christ. Again, that probably is not one of those ones that someone just walks up to others and says, "Are you being made like Christ? You know, today? I mean, or something." I don't even know how to kind of comically express that. Yeah, there we go. Thank you. Very good. I don't even know what that would mean. That's why it would be so strange. And yet here, you know, we know this is true. This is a very essential, elemental part of being a Christian, being made in the image of Christ, becoming conforming more and more each day.
I used to know a pastor, and he'd see a conflict or whatever, and he'd say, somebody is sincerely wrong.
Uh-huh.
So my question is, could, therefore, people be sincerely right? And if you're sincerely right, are you Christ-like?
Okay.
In other words, Gandhi may have been a real nice guy,
right,
but he's headed in the wrong direction.
Right, exactly.
And what good does that do?
Yeah. And then when you get into his whole life, he wasn't such a nice guy, so that turns out too. Let's flip back to Matthew. I'm kind of just laying a whole bunch of things out here and little loosey-goosey for me normally, but I'm willing to try here. So that's what we're doing. Matthew 6, 28 to 29. Now that doesn't seem quite right. Okay, I don't think I got the right one there. Jonathan Edwards has all those Roman numerals, and I don't necessarily... Oh, yeah, here we go. Matthew 11, 28 to 29. And 30, I think. Maybe we looked at this already. Anyway, go ahead and read that. Somebody. Got it? Anybody? Nick?
Sure. Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. My yoke is easy, and my burden is light.
All right. So I think I totally blew that. Whatever. But I'd have to look up in the book again what the example was. Somehow it's under the heading, Follow the Lamb. So I'm not sure I got it there. Let's look at Revelation 14:4. Okay, there we go. Now I got it. Yeah.
These are they which were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. These are they which follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. These were redeemed from among men, being the first fruits unto God and to the Lamb.
Okay. And I think I have a series of several of these verses where he's pointing out that Christ is the Lamb. So, you know, we're talking about being meek and with kind of the analogy of being like a lamb. How is that to happen? Well, we see over and over Christ referred to as the Lamb. You know, in part, probably C.S. Lewis, it just occurs to me, I've always thought it's strange that he used the lion for Christ, you know, Aslan. It's part of the struggle with this image. Now, what if Aslan had been a lamb? I mean, all of the Chronicles of Narnia, I mean, they just wouldn't stack up quite the same way. So even in there, I mean, truly we understand, you know, you get into it, okay, it's a good imagery and so forth. But probably, yeah. So, but that's still different than a lamb. You know, the lamb opens his mouth and what comes out? Bleat, you know, bah. It doesn't have quite the dramatic roar.
But he wasn't the Lamb of the tribe of Judah.
Okay. he's right. So I mean, that's why I say it's not. It's I'm. Yeah. He had basis
both.
For you.
Yes. Both yes. Lamb, you know, we're also called, you know, to be that lamb, totally dependent on the shepherd, because we have no claws, we have no teeth, we have, you know.
Right.
We
yeah.
So.
Yeah. That was just a side issue. So I don't want to carry it too far, because obviously he did a good job. But part of the struggle. You know, let's look at, I didn't write down what these will say. So let's just have some fun and look at these. John 21. I think it's just continuing on the same thought. Oh, okay, sure. John 21:15. And of course, this is a part of a larger passage, but John 21:15. Somebody want to read that for us? Go ahead, Gary.
Okay. So when they had dined, Jesus saith to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than thee? He saith unto them, Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, Feed my lambs.
Okay. So there again, you know this. We're like sheep or lambs, following the great shepherd, of course, ultimately. Lots of different terms used for Christ, but the lamb. So we're lambs like the great lamb. And then one more. Luke 10:3. Okay, here we go. Again. All right, John, read it for us there.
Go your way. Behold, I am sending you out as lambs in the midst of wolves.
Okay. So, what is the picture there? That's a pretty rough picture, huh? Isn't it?
What's that?
Right.
We're totally helpless.
Or, you know, more so in the face of persecution and great persecution unto death even, you know, we're going out as lambs amidst the wolves. We that's a pretty rough thing to hold on to.
Right. Too,
so. Yeah.
Like those wolves.
Now, can't we be lambs with, like, superpowers or something, or guns, or... Yeah, Ryan's over here thinking, okay, well, we'll put spears, and... But no, I mean, a lamb goes out without defense, completely dependent on the shepherd for the defense from the wolves. You know, Bill, I think, mentioned, or somebody in our comments mentioned business. I had thought about this. Well, how do you be meek in business? And if you're going to be Christ-like, and you know, this is something Bill and I have wrestled with through the years, you know, okay, so what does this mean, and how do I live this out? Now, one of the things that's so typical in a business setting is you get somebody in, you get them new, and then, you know, they want to do things legal in the right way and so forth, and then the people who are there say, you'll never make it in business. You got to do this or that. So a meekness in business is being committed wholly to the Lord to do things right. So if you say something's going to weigh a pound, you know, it weighs a pound or more. What's the kind of the other way? It's to shave something off or something like that. Now, I was thinking a great thing that I ran across years ago made a tremendous impression on me because I work with taxes and reporting to government entities and all that sort of thing. I always vote against taxes. I vote no. Any tax, I try and vote no in general. And if I was in the legislature, I'd be saying, lower taxes. I don't want to give more money to the government. In business, there's a tendency to carry that along, even amongst Christians, and then to kind of justify, well, if I'm giving money, if I'm paying taxes, I'm giving money to the government. I'm opposed to that. So can we kind of just little shade things a certain way? You know, just let's interpret that to say this. And Domino's Pizza, I interviewed for an arm of Domino's Pizza in Phoenix years ago, and the guy who was interviewing me, he didn't display any character of a Christian in any way, but he had this little cart that the guy behind Domino's had set up these five principles or something they were going to operate by. And one of them that was very striking to me was their principle was, each time a government inspector or tax auditor or something comes and into our business, we want them to say, this is the example of how a business should be. That I'm kind of amplifying it. They're transparent to me. They're not hiding. They're giving me all their records. If there's a mistake, you know, they tell me what the mistake is ahead of time. Or if they've made a mistake, you know, they're upfront about it. You know, and so Jeff and I talked some years ago about advertising. Now, with the car business, you can imagine there's a lot of pressure to kind of say, well, I mean, Jeff could probably articulate it better than I could, but, well, let's put this in an ad. But, you know, the California has it, so you can't just put in one car. That's called bait and switch, that you really don't have that car. Here's a car brand new car for $5,000. And then you get there and they say, you know, that really is in the shop and it's not available. So there's a lot of pressure in advertising. So Jeff struggled, you know, it's the same sort of the tax thing. And I believe you have told me, Jeff, that, you know, your advertising regulators, when they come in, they like to look at your ads because you have endeavored to follow the rules. You may not agree with them, all the rules, but you have endeavored. So that's being meek to me. Man, I have to characterize it in what's the opposite.
Sneaky wolves?
Yes. Thank you. Yeah, Bill.
Well, I'm thinking, like, in my marriage, I would like to, you know, by the end of my life, be one of those couples in the newspaper that married 66 years. I think we need more of that.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not saying I'm any better else than getting there, but I would like to be there. And getting there, I'm not saying that every day it's always been landline. I mean, I would like it to be, but sometimes, you know, there's these frictions, but hopefully we're heading in the right direction. And yeah, you have to maintain what? Balance or whatever.
Yep.
It's a tricky one.
All right. So if a husband's the head of the household in particular, is he a lamb in that? You know, again, we struggle with that sort of analogy. Well, what is a lamb who's the head of the household? Does that mean his wife tramples on him or whatever? I mean, that would be a poor example, but it's being Christ-like, not putting yourself first. You know, what's the opposite sort of example? Old kind of authoritarian dad, I said it, it goes, you know. Ah. So that's not particularly Christ-like.
It's interesting you brought up the idea of meekness. Meekness toward God, like you said, is honoring his commandments and being Christ-like. But meekness in business, it's important not to have an idolatry toward the government. Like, you'll meet some people that say, oh man, I always, you know, send in every dime I can.
Right.
But our money is going to fund abortion. It's going to fund all kinds of things, shutting down people's property, confiscating within the domain. So it's important that we don't have an idolatry toward the state where the state replaces God.
Yes.
And so we really should seek in every way possible not to give the government money, because the government takes that money and uses that money to enslave us. And so when you look at, like, 1 Samuel 8, it says, look, if the government takes 10%, it's going to take your daughters, and they're going to be his affectionaries and cooks, and it's going to take your sons to war, it's going to take your sons to confiscate a tenth of your property, a tenth of your food. So, and you'll cry on that day, and I will not hear you. So when we have this idolatry toward the state, we're stateless. And so it's important to, yes, we don't want to get in trouble with the state, but we also, in every opportunity possible, we don't want to go out of our way to serve the state.
Okay.
As many write-offs as possible.
One of the struggles, and why I would argue, you know, to think all that through, because certainly, like I say, I'm aware of some of that argument, but part of the struggle too is in that we have elections, let's say, mm-hmm. and then clearly someone's elected that we disagree with,
right?
And then they enact a law that we disagree with.
And never vote for them again.
Right. But the question is whether we're willing to submit to an election that has happened, you know, under the umbrella of God, and yet the outcome has been one that we disagree with. That's the fundamental issue to me.
That verse in like Isaiah, it says, "You choose princes, but not by me."
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So
under the judgment of God.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, we recognize, and even using the term judgment, you know, in essence, we're in a system that permits many free votes. And we're in a society that is against God. So therefore, we're electing folks who will bring judgment on us. But we're part, it's like being part of the nation of Israel, being Daniel in the nation of Israel. He was judged, and yet he was faithful. I mean, that's part of the struggle of being in this world and not part of it. You know, it's... Yeah, yeah.
Or like that verse that Jesus said, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's.
Right.
Are your children Caesar's?
Right.
No. Are you sure? You know, and so you want to say, no, my children are not Caesar's, so no, I'm not going to send them to the state, for the state of education to become a Roman.
Yeah.
And so there's so many times Christians are surrendering their children and certainly so much of what they do to the state.
Right. And I mean, that's it. Right. And excellent. Yeah. But like I say, the more dominant example that I've ever seen is one, and here's a great example to me. We had years ago, we had 3,000 employees or something like that. So we had a lot of income taxes going in. And the federal government kept rejecting them. So they'd send us these checks. I mean, we had these monstrous dollar checks coming back. And it was just totally messed up. And so a guy from the IRS shows up at our office one day. And he says, "I'm here because you haven't paid your taxes." And normally people would be very afraid of him, but we had prepared for the day when he would come. And so I went and I said to him, "Am I glad to see you?" It's probably the first and last time he ever heard that in working for the IRS. And I said, "Come on over here and sit down and let's walk through this," because we knew we needed to pay our taxes and they kept rejecting them. So, anyway.
We get this letter every year from the IRS telling us, you fill out this form and you get $1,000 per kid.
Oh, uh-huh.
Underage. And I don't do that because I don't think they have a right. The government doesn't have a right to do that.
Yes.
They have a right to take somebody else's money and give it to somebody who's got kids.
Yes.
We can spend for ourselves.
Sure.
And, you know, it's just inappropriate.
Yeah. And there's a lot of elements of...
a lot of money inappropriately.
Right.
It's just one of the many.
Right. I mean, there's certainly a lot of elements of conscience, you know, in that thing, in that sort of thing. All right, well, let's not get too far off the track. But
I could take that because they're asking...
Yes.
Like when David retired, there was a chunk of money we could take, but if we did, the government got most of it.
Right.
And I went ahead and took it because there were some things that we needed it for.
Yeah.
We didn't take the whole retirement, but we took that one chunk. And it's maddening, and I thought... You know, it's easy to justify this because you're doing that. And
right.
They don't have the right to give you the line.
Lots of aspects in that.
Yeah.
So, all right. Anyway, so the point like I say, this is not something I'm able to communicate very clearly, and Edwards does a very good job. This idea that truly gracious affections differ from those affections which are false and delusive, in that the truly gracious affections are attended with lamb-like, dove-like, spirit and temper of Jesus Christ. So that's the basic heading we've been trying to work out a little bit. There's a whole bunch more in that chapter. We didn't really get to it. And like I started out, we are not going through this whole book. That's not the intention of our class. But highly recommend it. Daphne, I'd ask Daphne. Daphne did read this book. So just comment if you want on that.
I think for me personally, since I don't have a lot of, I'm not trying to evaluate people necessarily like an elder or pastor would, the biggest thing I came away with was just the desire to kind of evaluate the motives of my own affections. You know, I can't make this happen. This is absolutely a work of Christ. But as a Christian, we can sit there and say, wow, am I putting on affections or are these genuine? What are my motives and how I'm living out my life? And that was, for me, just going down that list of the genuine affections in the Christian life and saying, am I demonstrating this? Am I growing in my Christ-likeness? Or am I putting on something fake? You know, and just and sitting and going back and forth for me was huge. And I really appreciated the fact that Edwards went point by point showing examples of this is the genuine article, and this is the fake, and making room for our temperaments and allowances for our personalities. But he also said, this is what you should be seeing. This is what you should be seeing in your life, and this is what you should be seeing in the lives of those around you. And that was huge. I found it very beneficial as just an evaluation tool. Kind of like when you go through Edward's resolution.
Right.
You say, wow, man, this guy really stopped to think about his walk with Christ. And you kind of get the same impression when you're going through there, just how deeply he really thought about was he growing in his faith.
Very good. All right.
I recommend it.
Okay.
It's a difficult read, though, so you read it, and then you're like, I need to start over again.
And like I said, I've had it for a number of years, but never had understood the context for it, too, in terms of seeing the, you know, all that was going on in the churches there in New England, and then his getting both sides of folks coming at that, those that were more staid or outside of that, and thinking, this can't be truly a work of God because of it just is too emotional, and so forth. And then on the other hand, him seeing rise up people who are doing false things, false teachers and strange things in the name of Christ, and wanting to be able to go back to those folks and point out the nature of their error. So that helped me quite a bit in reading through it this time. All right. So 2 weeks, we'll be back on track for our class, and my goal is then to have us look at David Brainerd's life. Edwards was instrumental in having Brainerd's diary published. We won't read through his whole diary, but we'll look at some of the things he wrote from his diary and just consider some of his life. It had occurred to me here recently, one class I hope to have, I don't know if I'll be up to it in the sense, but when Edwards passed away, when he died, there was a lot of family letters and so forth, and his own testimony as he was dying. Jim Steed pointed out that I was saying, gee, here's Edwards being quoted on his deathbed. And Jim Steed said, well, that was very common for the time, that as people were coming to the end of their lives, they knew they were going to die. They perhaps wanted in particular to praise God. So that was kind of consistent with that tradition. And one thing about Brainerd and his influence on Edwards is that Edwards had seen Brainerd come to the end of his life in his household, with them and then had seen Brainerd's testimony. And I thought, well, of course, Edwards was greatly influenced by that. And so my goal ultimately is to kind of help us work through that, at least in 1 week's session. So kind of preview of coming attractions. All right, let's close in prayer. Oh Lord, though I'm not able to fully lay these things out, we certainly have other witnesses who are stronger in being able to do this, like Jonathan Edwards. All of our thoughts here this morning, in terms of meekness, being like lambs, having Christ as a lamb. We pray that as we meditate on these thoughts and explore them further in our own study and perhaps come back to them at some other time, Lord, that you would open our hearts and minds to this thought and help us to understand and help us ultimately to be more like Christ. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.